Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Leaders Speak, a conversation on changing the way government does business. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Since its creation in 1998, the IBM Center for the Business of Government has sought to connect public management research to practice, and in turn, practitioners to researchers. We do this in a variety of ways. This show, the Business of Government Hour, is just one way we make this happen. Each week, I bring you leading government executives who are changing the way government does business. They share their in-depth reflections on the work they do and the efforts they lead. Our guests join us for an informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation, which highlights the progress being made in public management and the leaders who bring it about. Over the last 5 years, we've interviewed more than 250 government executives from the federal, state, and local levels. It is from this rich library that we've culled together their insights on topics important to you. This week, Leaders Speak brings you past and current government leaders and their insights on how government is changing the way it does business. Whenever possible, I also introduce the insights from authors of IBM Center reports. It is within this context that I've assembled a varied group of government executives and thought leaders for this special edition of the Business of Government Hour. In an era of fiscal contraction, today's government leaders face unique challenges that present many difficult choices. It is a period that, while imposing constraints, simultaneously confers as many opportunities. These are the opportunities to introduce new ways of doing business, explore pragmatic approaches, and pursue management imperatives that help government leaders perform in an ever-challenging and complex environment. Gene Dodaro, Comptroller General of the United States, identifies a variety of trends that illustrate this complex environment. It is a prelude to the challenges facing government executives that has prompted them to change the way they do business.
And we spent a lot of time making sure that we understand the trends because we believe they will shape the types of challenges federal government will face and the decisions that policymakers might have. First, there are national security threats. They've obviously become more diffuse and evolving. These are areas ranging from regional instability to extremism, terrorism, proliferation of nuclear weapons, cyber terrorism. These are all things that are very important, and they're also emerging challenges and threats that can be caused by changing economic conditions, even climate change, energy independence issues. So it's very important for the work that we do. So that's sort of trend number one, are these broad trends and changing security threats. Second are the fiscal sustainability challenges. The federal government faces enormous challenges in this regard to make sure that we can put the federal government on a more sustainable long-term fiscal path. This is dominating a lot of the discussion now in the Congress. But we also look at the state and local sector as well, and they face many of the same challenges. Third are economic recovery and growth. Obviously, we're dealing still with the aftermath of the last recession. Unemployment's high. Housing market is still weak. You know, we monitor the banking sector and other sectors of the economy as well and look at the federal government's activities to provide training assistance and others. Global interdependence is the fourth trend, and this is very important not only for flows of capital, which receives a lot of attention, but also other areas of trade and products that are really changing how the federal government needs to protect the public. In food safety, for example, and medical devices and drugs. The next trend, science and technology, obviously a lot of changes, nanotechnology, cloud computing, a lot of areas that are potential solutions to help both from an economic growth standpoint in our country, but also the effective and productivity of government and the private sector. But they have a lot of issues that need to be dealt with. For example, you know, cloud computing can be very helpful in driving down costs, but there are also security issues that need to be dealt with the federal government. Another trend is networks and virtualization. You know, obviously, how we learn, communicate, and deal with one another is changing dramatically. across the world, and it's for mobile devices, wireless technologies, and et cetera. And this involves looking and shaping how the federal government's adapting to those changes, both from a regulatory standpoint and broadband technologies, allocation of spectrum, for example, but also how the federal government's using these devices to improve its own performance in dealing with the public. And also the last trend is demographics and social changes. Very important to understand because they have important policy ramifications for the government.
Many of the trends described by Comptroller General Gene Dodaro challenge the way government does business, and how government executives respond matters most. Danny Warfel, Comptroller, Office of Federal Financial Management within OMB, highlights the specific challenges facing most government executives today.
Well, let me start with the most obvious challenge that I think anyone sitting in a government leadership position is looking at right now, and that is the declining resource environment that we find ourselves in. It is no surprise that the budget cuts that we're facing impact all parts of government, and chief financial officers are no different. And so you have this dual-edged challenge of trying to modernize and make government more efficient. And you know, we say a lot, it's never been more critical for us to do so because of the challenging budgetary situation that we find ourselves in. The number one challenge that I have right now is working with federal agencies to define those steps that they can take and those investments that they can make that are going to have the highest impact and that are going to be the most shrewd, for lack of a better term, in managing this tension. The second one that I would articulate is, in order to navigate the tension that I just described of a lower resource base and a need, a necessity to become more efficient, we've got to break old habits and we've got to innovate to do so. So the example I'll use is with respect to information technology. And we have an approach that we've taken to modernize business systems in government over the last decade. And the approach has proven to be slow and expensive. We have to do them more quickly and get more critical performance out of them. And the third issue, and it's very related to the other two, is what I call creating a culture of collaboration. If one agency has a success, how do we create an environment that other agencies are obsessed with what that success was, how was it achieved, and how can I learn about how that success might impact my area? Or a failure. What happened? What went wrong?
So how is government changing the way it does business? Danny Warfel offers a glimpse explaining the work he is doing to meet many of these challenges head on.
Well, the way I think about the work that we're doing, I put it into two different buckets of activities. It's either about cutting waste or it's about building a government for the 21st century. We have this initiative we call the Campaign to Cut Waste. It was launched by the president through an executive order last spring in June, put the vice president in charge of it, which, you know, relates back to I've had several opportunities to work with the vice president directly, first on the Recovery Act, now on the Campaign to Cut Waste, and the whole vice president's team, who are fantastic to work with. We have a whole variety of different things we're trying to achieve under the Campaign to Cut Waste. We are cutting administrative savings, things like IT, printing, and travel, vehicles or fleet. You know, this is kind of the bread and butter stuff that won't necessarily, you know, eliminate our deficit by any stretch, but represent two things. First, they represent dollars, and every dollar counts. I'm the most frugal guy I know. So if I hear about an agency that involved in something where $5,000 was wasted, or $5 million, or $50 million, I'm upset. In either way, you know, I every dollar counts, and these are practical things that can be done. We don't have to get rid of an automobile. That's fine, just because we're interested in the next upgrade. We can hold on to our vehicles longer. You know, we don't need a printer on every desk. We don't need to travel just for the sake of travel without a critical purpose for that travel. We issued that 20% cut requirement back in November of 2011, and then we put in the president's budget all the agencies these commitments on that 20% cut, and it totaled $8 billion. And then within the campaign to cut waste, there's other things. There's improper payments. There's managing our real estate more effectively. And I'd say on the 21st century government, there's a lot going on, but to pick a top priority, I'd pick how are we going to move forward in open government and transparency. And in particular, where I have the most responsibility and where I lose the most sleep at night is how are we making federal spending more transparent? All of those things are part of a strategic set of priorities that I'm working on with the financial management community.
For federal agencies to be successful requires support and assistance. GSA's Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies has positioned itself as the government-wide leader in identifying and fostering the adoption of new and innovative technologies, fostering new ways of doing business. Here's Kathy Conrad, its Principal Deputy Associate Administrator.
Well, we have a very lean but incredibly productive office, about 100 super talented, hardworking people, plus a team of excellent contractors, and a budget of about $35 million, pretty small. But we're a little spark plug, igniting innovation all across government through two primary organizations, the Office of Citizen Services and the Office of Innovative Technologies. The Office of Citizen Services provides consumer information and services to the public wherever, whenever, and using whatever device or communication channel they choose. The Office of Innovative Technology identifies and fosters innovative technologies that help agencies increase efficiency, enhance effectiveness of services to citizens, and achieve cost savings. So most of our programs are divided into those two offices. We've got, as I said, the Federal Citizen Information Center, which runs USA.gov, Gobierno.gov, Kids.gov, the National Contact Center, and PublicationsUSA.gov. We have the Center for Excellence in Digital Government, which runs our Challenges program, which you're familiar with, and supports the Federal Web Managers Council. We have a mobile PMO, which has more recently been combined with our Digital Services Innovation Center. And then in the innovative technology arena, we have the Federal Cloud Computing PMO, our FedRAMP program, Federal Data Center Consolidation Program, and data.gov, along with a few others.
Conrad's office plays a lead role in pursuing a cloud-first policy to save money and improve performance.
It's forcing agencies to consider whether there are better, more agile ways to use scarce IT resources to enable achievement of desired program and mission outcomes. It's important to remember cloud computing is not about the technology. It's about mission enablement. So what is it? Lots of different definitions, but I think the best way to think about it is as a utility, where you buy the services you need to meet real-time demands. Cloud solutions offer infrastructure as a service solutions like servers and storage that can be used to host websites and meet other requirements, software as a service for applications such as email, or platform as a service, which can be used for testing and development, other requirements.
Kathy Conrad identifies at least three benefits to pursuing a cloud-first solution.
In terms of benefits, there are really three key benefits. First, it's cheaper. Services are automatically delivered and consumed as they're used, which means you only pay for what you actually use. Agencies can shift from owning and maintaining costly physical assets to managing service delivery, reducing the need for ongoing capital expenditures. And cost savings are also achieved from aggregated demand. If you can aggregate demand across an entire enterprise, you benefit from economies of scale and save significant funds over the long term. Second, it's actually better in terms of performance. On-demand services enable flexible, rapid response to dynamic business needs. So you know that as your needs change, you can get the services that you actually need. And it's faster. You can provision services rapidly and automatically, dramatically decreasing time to deploy or implement solutions. So it's better, faster, and cheaper. Seems like a pretty good deal.
Cloud computing is just one way government is changing the way it does business. What are some of the other ways government is changing the way it does business? We will explore this question and so much more when the special edition of the Business of Government Hour returns.